Hi, my name is Alex King. I'm a senior, and today I'm here to introduce Patricia Smith. Patricia Smith, born in Chicago, Illinois, is known for many things: a former journalist, a playwright, author, and recently a visiting creative writing professor at Princeton University. She is decorated with many awards, such as the Ruth Lilly Poetry Prize for Lifetime Achievement, a two-time winner of the Pushcart Prize, and a four-time individual champion of the Poetry Slam competition, where my African-American literature class saw her impressive performance in the 1996 documentary Slam Nation. She is the author of 9 poetry collections, with her most recent one, Unshuttered, only released earlier this year. Not only do her poems force the reader to accept the hard truth about real events, but they do so in a way that engages the reader, including a choose-your-own-adventure. My favorite section from Incendiary Art is titled Accidental, where she puts a date and event where police have unfairly shot an African-American individual and follows with a poem from the accused point of view. While hard to read, it gives a voice to those who are not able to tell their own stories and lets the reader see through another's eyes. As Walter Mosley states, Patricia Smith is a masterful poet, performer, and pundit. And while her chosen field is the form of grace of language, her gift to the world that orbits the Black experience is truth. The book gives us, many for the first time, a change to imagine a future that includes our flaws and our potentials, all while balancing the accounts of tragedy. While I've had the pleasure to explore her work to introduce her today, I encourage others to do the same, as I believe she gives a voice to those who struggle to come to terms with their own experiences in a way that is powerful and creative. And without further ado, I am happy to introduce the 2023 Aiken Taylor Award for Modern American Poetry, Patricia Smith.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. So what is it, Spirit Day? It's Spirit Day, right? What do you guys got on? Let's see, some spirit. No? No? Yeah? Hats? Okay. Oh, it's all hats. Okay. All right, yeah, you look pretty cool. This is good. I want to come every day and see what you guys are doing. Anyway, thank you, Alex. Thank you so much for inviting me. It's very good to be here. I am going to read a poem about my favorite word. And as you'll see in a later poem, a teacher sort of wrote the word on the board and asked who could pronounce it. And I kept saying it over and over. And I said, this is amazing, this word. I don't know what it means yet, but it feels so good in my mouth. This goes back a little bit to how I really started writing, how it became kind of magic for me. So I want to read that first. It's called Related to the Buttercup Blooms in Spring. What do we do with these huge gifts of the throat and tongue? How do we manage? I used to believe that nobody but me could see the stars shimmering riot outside my window. Mama, my stars are here, I'd say, my stars. I welcomed them with a notebook, tooth-marked Bic, and teeny revolutions crammed into the stingy space of a college-ruled line. They used to make us write, like, over and over. Anybody else? Like, A, B, 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 over and over and over and over and over and over. I wrote until the precise script wandered, until the stars blinked themselves dim and said, good night, Patricia Ann. It's late even for us, and it hurts to watch how hard you dream. One morning, I woke to find whole pages filled with a single word, anemone. I guess, like, mispronounce it, right? Anemone. Over and over, N's and M's straining to Stern Palmer Method hilltops. Anemone. Miss Stein, I can't explain the dizzy I felt the day you chalked that word on the board and said, who can pronounce this? I wish I could grant you breath here, but all I recall is dark hair vaguely flipped, a slight sour to you, and the weary smile of a young girl teaching on Walnut Street, just down the block from your million miles away. Funny how you twisted me by introducing a word you figured would stump us all. Funny how I bellowed the odd accents and a light grew slow behind your eyes. That one word was sweet silver on my new tongue. It kept coming back to my mouth. It was the very first sound I wanted to own, to name myself after. I wanted no one else to ever utter this. Even now, listen to how anemone circles, turns round, and surprises itself. That day, I gave that word a home just under my breath, and at least 100 times I drew on the drug of it, serving it up to the needing air, all this before I even knew what it meant. If you never remember feeling that way about a single word, sensing a burn in the sheer power of its sound, lift up your poetry, all those thick, important pages, and see that they are resting on nothing. Then shred those sheets, toss them to sky, and lie prone beneath the empty flutter. You must own one word completely before you can claim another. Miss Stein, go ahead. Make me nine again. Take me back to when I wasn't afraid of anything except long division and the words, go pull me off a switch. It's my mother, she's not here though. When Karen Ford and I wriggled against each other for new taboo, Miss Stein, I couldn't stop writing. I wrote myself angled and tress-topped. I wrote myself hero. I wrote myself white, Cherokee, cheerleader, distressed damsel in Alan Ladd's arms. I wrote myself winged, worshipped. I wrote long stories where I was always the primary twinkle, the beacon, inevitably envied. I wrote anemone over and over and over in rigid hand, the loops and hilltops perfect, anemone. When I was nine, the barbershops left their doors open and all manners of glory spilled out. Charms and curses spritzed with mango oil that makes black heads shimmer. Balls of sliced hair slip sliding the tile, my people razzing and razored, the dozens in effect, sentence songs, spontaneous doo-wop where any two lines came together to make a corner. I was little woman, sweet little crumb snatcher. Baby, you're pretty. Won't be long before those boys start coming around. I'd squeeze my eyes shut, loving those hold-on lies. I knew the men in the barbershop would have a place in my stories, crowns wobbling on sculpted scalp, all their ain't done bins and musta haves and done gone for goods, languaging the air of the world I had waiting. I wrote their bodies arcing over mine, their lucky struck smooches on the top of my head, their lifting me and whirling me around till nothing made sense but the spin. I wrote about that heartbreak in their eyes, miles north of the heart, how they stayed mad all morning. I heard them talk about women. I heard them say, come on in here, little girl, always carrying that notebook. Come on in here and sit in this chair and write me something pretty. Miss Stein, you unlatched this fever. Wherever you are, may you be blessed by whatever God means to you. Anemone, a sweet beginning I can hide in my mouth. I live on its taste when my pen won't move. Thank you. Thank you very much. Before I started teaching at Princeton, I was teaching at the City University of New York, and they let everyone I was teaching at the College of Staten Island, and everyone who applies gets in. So I had these huge classes, and some people could be published the next day, and some people should never have graduated from high school. So it was really hard for me to get my students to write. They hated writing. One day it was time for the test, the final, and I came in, you know, and they're all, their shoulders are all slumped and they're looking down like, oh, it's time for the final. And so I go coming in and I say, surprise, no final. And they're like, yay, yay. They carried me around on their shoulders for a while. So I said, instead, I got something else I want you to do. I asked them, I said, what was your most difficult age? Okay, so they started calling out different, you know, they said, oh, 15 or 12. Okay, and you guys, what was your most difficult age? They're all six. What was your most difficult age? 15, 17, 12, seven? What was difficult about seven? Okay, all right, Teachers are like 32 yesterday. The consensus with my students was the most difficult age was 13. okay? And I don't mean to scare those of you who aren't 13 yet, but they said the most difficult age was 13. It was like the beginning of middle school for them. If you have a voice, something is wrong with it, you know? If you have skin, something's wrong with that, you know? So I said, here's your new final. I said, I want you to write a poem about being 13. I want it to be 13 stanzas, 13 lines each stanza, 13 syllables each line. Yeah, right. And so whenever I give my students something weird like that, I do it too. So my 13 and their 13 in some ways were very different, but my 13, there's some things that are just universally miserable about it. So I'm going to read, don't worry, not the whole thing, but I'm going to read some stanzas from my 13 ways of looking at 13. I'll read the funny ones. They say, we'll be the judge of that. Okay, not that one, not that one. Okay. Oh, remember Miss Stein, an anemone? She's in this poem too, so I'll start with that. Miss Stein scribbled a word on the blackboard, said, who can pronounce this? And the word was anemone. Anemone. And from that moment, you first felt the clutter of possible in your mouth. From the time you stumbled through the rhythm and she slow smiled, you suddenly knew you had the right to be explosive, to sling syllables through back doors, to make up your own words if you needed them. All that way, sweet anemone tangled in your teeth, spurted sugar tongue, led you to the dictionary where you were assured that it existed, to the cave of the bathroom where you warbled it in bounce echo, and finally convinced you own that teeny gospel. You wrote it again and again and again and again. This is about my terrible skin when I was 13. That sounds wonderful, right? Oh, let's hear that. You try to keep your hands off your face, but the white-capped pimples might harbor evil. It looks like something cursed is trying to escape your cheeks. Your whole soul could be involved. So you pinch, squeeze, and pop. You let the smelly snow smash the mirror, slather your fresh scarred landscape with creams that clog and strangle. At night, you look just like someone obsessed with the moon, its gruff superstitions, and its lies. Your skin is a patchwork of wishing. You scrub and dab and mask and surround. You bombard, spritz, and peel, rubbing alcohol, flesh tone clearasil that pinkens and cakes while new dirt worms shimmy beneath the pummet circle of you. Every time you touch your face, you leave a scar. Hey you, every time you touch your face, you leave a scar. In the bathroom, okay. okay. In the bathroom of the whatnot joint on the way to school, you get rid of the starch and billowed lace, barrettes taming unraveling braids, white knee socks in sensible hues. From a plastic bag, you take out electric blue eyeshadow, platforms with silver glittered heels, neon fishnets, and a blouse that doesn't so much button as suggest shut. The transformation takes 5 minutes, and you emerge feeling like a budding lady, but looking, in retrospect, like a bug bursting from a cocoon. This is what television does. Turns your mother into clueless backdrop, fills your pressed head with the probability of thrum. Your body becomes just not yours anymore. It's a dumb little marquee. Okay, so I used to put my father's shirt on my head and let the sleeves hang down the side and go around the house like, so that's part of this. With your bedroom door closed, you are skyscraper bouffant, peach foundation, eyelashes like upturned claws. You are exuding ice. You are pinched all over by earrings. You are way too much woman for this room. The audience has one chest, a single share chance to gasp. They shudder, heave, waiting for you to open your mouth and break their hearts. Taking the stage, you become an S, pour ache into hip swings, tisk tisk as the front row collapses. You lift the microphone, something illegal comes out of you. Mama flings the door open with a church version of your name. Then you are pimpled, ashed, and double Dutch knees. You are spindles. You are singing into a hairbrush. Okay. 10. This is what everyone else is doing. Skating in soul circles, skinning their shins, hiding in the coat room, skimming alleys for Chicago rats, failing English, math, crushing curfew, lying about yesterday and age, slipping Woolworth's bounty into an inside pocket. Here is what everyone else is doing. Getting turned around in the subway, flinging curse words, inhaling a supper before supper, fried up in hot Crisco and granulated sugar, sneaking out through open windows when the night goes dark, calling mama's names under their breath, staying up till dawn to see what hides. Here is what you are doing. Reading. Let's see, what's this? I have to like scan through this first. Okay, so this is like having this. This one is about like first crush. Right. That boy does not see you. He sees through you, past your tone of undecided earth. You are the exact shade of the failed paper bag test. The Aunt Esther, you are hair forever turning back in the direction from which it came. You are clacking knees and nails bitten to blood. Stumbling forth in black prescribed shoes, you have no knowledge of his knowledge. That boy does not see you. So squeeze your eyes shut and imagine your name's first syllable in the sugared well of his throat. Dream of all the ways he is not walking past you again, turning his eyes to the place where you were, where you're standing, where you shake, where you pray, where you're not. Last one. This is 13. You're almost 14, and you think you're ready to push beyond the brutal wisdoms of the one and the three, but some nagging crave in you doesn't want to let go. You suspect that you will never be this unfinished, stuttering sachet, fuses in your swollen self suddenly lit and spitting, and you'll need to give your hips a name for what they did while you weren't there. You'll miss the pervasive fever that signals blooming, the sore lessons of jump rope in your calves. This is the last year. Oh, this is the last year your father is allowed to be your friend. Sighing, you push Barbie's perfect body through the thick dust of a top shelf. There, her prideful heart thunders. She has heartened you well. She has taught you everything. Let's see. Okay, I think I got, how much time do I have left, guys? About one more poem, maybe? I don't know where my 20 minutes, and then we're gonna, one more? Okay, sure. Let's see. So the last poem is the poem that when you think about me from now on for the rest of your life, you'll think about this poem. So I think I could do this one. See if there's. Okay. Okay, so I am an only child. And my mother was the kind of the official parent. She was like the disciplinarian. She's not very emotionally affected, you know, just kind of the rule keeper. And my father was amazing. So I was daddy's girl. And my father taught me how to cook while my mother was doing other things, watching television or whatever. My father would, we'd go in the kitchen and I'd talk about my day, and my father would do a little recipe, not measuring anything, and show me how to do it. And so that was my fondest memory of my dad. So this is the first poem that started out about the first thing my dad taught me how to cook. The recipe for hot water cornbread is simple. Cornmeal, hot water. Mix till sluggish, then dollop in a sizzling skillet. When you smell the burning begin, flip it. When you smell the burning begin again, dump it onto a plate. You've got to wait for the burning and get it just right. Before the bread cools down, smear it with sweet salted butter and smash it with your fingers. Crumble it up in a bowl of collard greens or buttermilk. Forget that I'm telling you, it's the first thing I ever cooked, that my daddy was still laughing and breathing when he taught me. Mix it till it looks like quicksand, he'd say, till it moves like a slow song sounds. We'd sit there in the kitchen, licking our fingers and laughing at my mother, who was probably scrubbing something with bleach or watching Bonanza. You guys remember Bonanza? Nobody. Okay. Or thinking how stupid it was to be burning that nasty old bread in that cast iron skillet. When I told her that I'd made my first ever pan of hot water cornbread and that my daddy had branded it glorious, she sniffed and kept mopping the floor over and over in the same space. So here's how you do it. You take out a bowl, like the one we had with blue flowers and only one crack. You put the cornmeal in it. Then you turn on the hot water and you let it run while you tell the story about the boy who kissed your cheek after school, or about how you really want to be a reporter instead of a teacher or a nurse like Mama said, and Daddy says you will be a wonderful writer and you will be famous someday. And when you get famous, if I wrote you a letter and sent you some money, would you write about me? And he is laughing and breathing. So you let the water run into this mix that moves like mud moves at the bottom of a river, which is another thing Daddy said, and even though I'd never even seen a river, I knew exactly what he meant. Then you turn the fire way up under the skillet, and you pour in this mix that moves like mud moves at the bottom of a river, like quicksand, like a slow song sounds. That stuff pops something awful when it first hits that blazing skillet, and sometimes Daddy and I would dance to those angry pop sounds. He let me rest my feet on top of his while we waltzed around the kitchen, and my mother huffed and puffed on the other side of the door. When you are famous, Daddy asked me, will you write about dancing in the kitchen with your father? I say everything I write will be about you. Then you will be famous too. And we dip and swirl and spin, but then he stops and sniffs the air. The thing you have to remember about hot water cornbread is to wait for the burning so you know when to flip it. And then again so you know when it's crusty and done. Then eat it the way we did, with our fingers, our feet still tingling from dancing. But remember that sometimes the burning takes such a long time. And in that time, sometimes, poems are born. Thank you. Thank you so much.